more vast and incomprehensible than déjà vu, an inevitability finally manifesting.
The White Mansion.
4. The night the walls came crashing down, I cowered in a belfry, my only goal to survive until dawn. I had no idea if the world would survive with me. I thought it was the longest night of my life. I was wrong. This is the longest night of my life, walking side by side with my enemy, mourning Jericho barons, drowning in my own complicity. It stretches on and on. I live 1,000 hours in a handful. I count from 1 to 60 beneath my breath, over and over, ticking away the minutes I make it through, thinking if I put enough of them between me and his death, the immediacy of the pain might dull, and I will be able to catch a breath without a knife stabbing through my heart. We do not pause to eat or sleep. He keeps unseelie flesh in a pouch and periodically chews it while we travel, which means he can keep going far longer than I. At some point, I'll be forced to rest. The thought of relinquishing consciousness in his presence is not a pleasant one. I have weapons in my arsenal that I've not yet tried on him. I have no doubt he is concealing armaments, too. Our truce is a floor of eggshells, and we're both wearing combat boots. "Where is the Unseelie King?" I ask, hoping distraction might make the minutes move faster. "It's his book on the loose out there. I heard he wants it destroyed. Why isn't he doing something about it?" I may as well embark on an Unseelie fishing expedition, casting my nets for anything I can use. Until I know how powerful Darok is, and better understand what I have in my dark glassy lake, subtlety is the name of my game. I will make no rash moves that jeopardize my mission. Baron's resurrection depends on it. He shrugs.
He vanished long ago. Some say he's too insane to care. Others believe he cannot leave the Unseelie prison and lies encased in a tomb of black ice, slumbering eternally. Still others claim the prison never contained him to begin with, and that remorse for the death of his concubine was the only bond he ever permitted.
That implies love. Fae don't.
Debatable. I recognize myself in you and find it compelling. It makes me less alone.
Translation. I serve as a mirror, and the Fae enjoy their own reflection. Is that desirable to a Fae, to be less alone?
Few Fae can endure solitude. Some posit that energy cast into an ethos that fails to reflect or rebound it permits that energy to dissipate until nothing remains. Perhaps it is a flaw.
Like clapping for Tinkerbell, I mock. A mirror validation. He gives me a look. Is that what the Fae are made of? Energy? He gives me another look that reminds me of Valain, and I know that he will never discuss what the Fae are comprised of with me or any human. His superiority complex has in no way been diminished by time as a mortal. Rather, I suspect it has grown. He knows both sides now. This gives him a tactical advantage over other Fae. He understands what makes us tick and is more dangerous because of it. I file the energy idea away for further contemplation. Iron affects the Fae. Why? Are they some kind of energy that could be shorted out? You admit to flaws? I press.
We are not perfect. What God is. Examine yours. According to your mythos, he was so disappointed with his initial efforts creating your race that he tried again. At least we imprisoned our mistakes. Your God permits his to roam free. At a mere few thousand years old, your creation myths are far more absurd than ours. Yet you wonder why we can't recall our origins from 1,000,000 or more years in the past.
We have drawn closer to each other while speaking, and both realize it at the same time. We glide back in instant retreat, regaining enough distance between us that we would see an attack from the other coming. Part of me finds this amusing. The princes have not yet reappeared. I am grateful. Although they no longer impact me sexually, they have a profoundly terrible presence. They leave me feeling oddly two-dimensional, minus something essential. Guilty. Betrayed in a way I can't understand and don't want to. I don't know if I feel this because I was once beneath them, with my entire sense of self being stripped from my skin and bones, or if they are fundamentally anathema to all humans. I wonder if the stuff of which they were made by the Unseelie King is so alien and horrific to us that they are the equivalent of a psychic black hole. That they are unspeakably beautiful only makes it worse. Their exquisiteness is the event horizon from which there is no escape. Ah, I shiver. I remember. I will never forget. Three of them and an invisible fourth moving over me, in me. Because Dara commanded it. That, too, I will never forget. I thought being raped by them was terrible, that it had carved me in deep places, changed my innate makeup. I'd known nothing of pain, of transforming change. I do now. We clear the forest, and the terrain begins to slope downward. With the moon lighting our way, we hike through dark meadows. I give up my fishing expedition for now. My throat is raw from screaming, and putting one foot in front of the other while keeping an impassive expression on my face takes all my concentration. I slog through a lifetime of hell in the interminable darkness before dawn. I replay the scene on the cliff through my head 1,000 times, pretending it ended some other way. Thick grass and slender flat rushes rustle at my waist and brush the undersides of my breasts. If there are animals in the dense thicket, they keep their distance. If I were an animal, I would keep my distance from us, too. The climate grows more temperate. The air warms with the perfume of exotic night-blooming jasmine and honeysuckle. As abruptly as night falls here, dawn breaks. The sky is black one moment, pink, then blue. 3 seconds night to day. I made it through the night. I draw a shallow, careful breath. When my sister was killed, I discovered that the light of day has an irrational leavening effect on grief. I have no idea why. Maybe it's just to shore us up so we can survive the lonely, bleak night again. I didn't know we were on a high plain until we were suddenly at the edge of the plateau, and I am startled by the valley dropping sharply away before me. Across that valley, on an oceanic swell of hill, it looms. It soars. It sprawls for miles in every direction. The White Mansion. Again, I get that uncanny feeling of inevitability that, one way or another, life would have deposited me here, that in any reality I would have made the same choices that drove me to its door. Home to the Unseelie King's beloved concubine, for whom he killed the Seelie Queen. It is so enormous it boggles the mind. I turn my head from side to side, up and down, trying to take it all in. One could hope to behold its entirety only from miles away, as we are now. Was this where Barons had been trying to lead me? If so, why? Had Riordan been lying when he found me on the cliff's edge and told me that the way back to Dublin was through an IFP? An interdimensional fairy pothole, as I dubbed the slivers of fey reality that splintered our world now that the walls were down? The walls are alabaster, reflecting the sun, and blaze with such brilliance that I narrow my eyes to slits. The sky beyond the house, I cannot think of it without a capital. It is far more than a mere residence, deepens to a dazzling blue that exists only in fairy, a shade that will never be seen in the human world. There are certain fairy colors that have dimension, are comprised of myriad seductive subtleties upon which the eye could linger for time uncounted. The sky is nearly as addictive as the golden floor in the Hall of All Days. I force my gaze back to the White Mansion. I explore its lines, foundation to rooftop, terrace to tower, garden to fountain to turret, a Mobius strip of tiered structures on an Escheresque landscape. It turns back on itself here and there, continuous and unbroken, ever-changing and unfolding. It strains the eye, tests the mind. But I've seen Fae in their true form. I find it soothing. In my dead black heart, I feel something. I don't understand how anything could stir in there, but it does. Not a full-blown feeling, but an echo of an emotion. Faint, yet undeniable. Derek watches me. I pretend not to notice.
Your race has never built a thing of such beauty, complexity, and perfection,
he says. Nor has my race ever created a Shusadu, I parry.
Small creatures create small things.
Large creatures' egos are so big they don't see the small things coming, I murmur. Like traps, I don't say. He intuits it. He laughs and says,
I will remember the warning, Makayla.
After he found the first two silvers at an auction house in London, Derek tells me he had to learn to use them. It took him dozens of tries to establish a static link into the Fey realms. Then, once he was inside the silvers, it took him months to find a way to the Unseelie prison. There's pride in his voice as he speaks of his trials and triumphs. Stripped of his Fey essence, he not only survived when his race didn't believe he would, but he accomplished the goal he'd been pursuing as a Fey, the very thing for which he'd been banished. He feels superior to others of his kind. I listen, analyzing everything he tells me, looking for chinks in his armor. I know Fey have feelings such as arrogance, superiority, mockery, and condescension. Listening to him, I add pride, vengeance, impatience, gloating, and amusement to the list. We've been making small talk for some time, watching each other intently. I've told him about growing up in Ashford, my first impressions of Dublin, my love of fast cars. He has told me more about his fall from grace, what he did, why he did it. We compete to disarm each other with trivial confidences that betray nothing of importance. As we cross the valley, I say, why go to the Unseelie prison? Why not the Seelie court?
And give Avil the opportunity to finish me off for good. The next time I see the bitch, she dies.
Was that why he'd taken my spear, to kill the queen? He'd lifted it without my awareness, just like Valain had. How? He wasn't Fey anymore. Had he eaten so much Unseelie that he was now a mutant with unpredictable abilities? I recall being in the church, sandwiched between Unseelie princes, turning the spear on myself, throwing it, striking the pedestal of a basin, holy water splashing, steam hissing. How had he made me throw it away then? How had he taken it from me now? Is the queen at the Seelie court right now? I cast my net again.
How would I know? I have been banished. Assuming I found a way in, the first Seelie that saw me would kill me.
Don't you have allies at the Seelie court? Isn't Valain your friend? He snorts disdainfully.
Ha! We sat on her high council together, though he gives lip service to Fey supremacy and speaks of walking the earth freely again without the odious compact governing us. Us, as if humans could govern their gods. When it comes to action, Valain is Avil's lapdog and always has been. I am now human, according to my fairer brethren, and they despise me.
I thought you said they worshipped you as a hero for tearing the walls down and freeing them. His eyes narrow.
I said they will. Soon I will be heralded as the savior of our race.
So you went to the Unseelie prison. That was risky. I prod to keep him talking. As long as he's talking, I can focus on his words, on my goals. Silence isn't golden, it's deadly. It's a vacuum that fills up with ghosts.
I needed the hunters. As a Fey, I could summon them. As a mortal, I had to physically seek them.
I'm surprised they didn't kill you on sight. Hunters hate humans. The black-skinned winged demons have no love for anything but themselves.
Death is not a hunter's delight. Too final.
A memory flickers through his eyes, and I know that when he found them, they did things to him that made him scream for a long time.
They agreed to help me in exchange for permanent freedom. They taught me to eat Unseelie. After tracking weaknesses in the prison walls where Unseelie had escaped before, I patched them.
To make yourself the only game in town? He nods.
If my dark brethren were going to be freed, they would be thanking me for it. I discovered how to link silvers and created a passage to Dublin through the White Mansion.
Why here?
Of all the dimensions I explored, this one remains the most stable, aside from a few inconveniences. It seems Cruce's curse had little effect on this realm, other than to splinter dimensions that are easily avoided.
I call them IFPs, but I do not tell him this. It made Baron smile. Little made Baron smile. I think I'm under control, that I've stripped away all weaknesses, that committing to my mission has made me impervious. I'm wrong. The thought of Baron smiling brings other thoughts. Baron's naked. Dancing. Dark head thrown back. Laughing. The image doesn't gently swim up in my mind, in a dreamy sort of way like I've seen in movies. No, this one slams into my head like a nuclear missile, exploding in my brain in graphic detail. I suffocate in a mushroom cloud of pain. I can't breathe. I squeeze my eyes shut. White teeth flashing in his dark face. I get knocked down, but I get up again. You're never gonna keep me down. I stagger. But he didn't get up. The bastard, he stayed down. With my spear in his back. How am I supposed to find my way each day without him here to help me? I don't know what to do, how to make decisions. I can't survive this grief. I stumble and go down on one knee. I clutch my head. Derok is at my side, helping me stand. His arms are around me. I open my eyes. He is so close that I see gold speckles in his coppery eyes. Wrinkles crease the corners. Faint lines bracket his mouth. Has he laughed so often in his time as a mortal? My hands curl into fists. His hands are gentle on my face when he pushes my hair back.
What happened?
Neither image nor pain is gone from my brain. I cannot function in this state. In moments, I will be on my knees, screaming with grief and fury, and my mission will go straight to hell. Derok will see my weakness and kill me, or worse. Somehow, I have to survive. I have no idea how long it will take me to find the book and learn how to use it. I wet my lips. Kiss me, I say. Hard. His mouth tightens.
I am not a fool, Michaela.
Just do it, I snarl. I watch him weigh the idea. Two scorpions. He is skeptical. He is fascinated. When he kisses me, Barons vanishes from my head. The pain recedes. On the lips of my enemy, my sister's lover, my lover's killer, I taste the punishment I deserve. I taste oblivion. It makes me cold and strong again. I have dreamed of houses all my life. I have an entire neighborhood in my subconscious that I can get to only while sleeping. But I can't control my nocturnal visits any more than I've ever been able to avoid my Coldplay dreams. Sometimes I'm granted passage, and sometimes I'm not. Certain nights the doors open easily, while others I stand outside, denied entrance, longing for the wonders that lie within. I don't understand people who say they can't recall their dreams. With the exception of the Coldplay dream, which I began blocking long ago, I recall all the others. When I wake in the morning, they're floating through my mind in fragments, and I can either spring out of bed and forget them, or gather up the pieces and examine them. I read somewhere that dreams about houses are dreams of our souls. In those dwellings of our psyche, we store our innermost secrets and desires. Perhaps that's why some people don't remember them. They don't want to. A girl I knew in high school once told me she dreamed of houses too, but they were always pitch black, and she could never find the light switch. She hated those dreams. She wasn't the brightest bulb in the box. My houses are endless, filled with sunshine and music, gardens and fountains. And for some reason, there are always a lot of beds, big beds, way more than any house needs. I don't know what the deal is with that, but I think it might mean I think about sex a lot. Sometimes I worry that there's not enough room in my brain for both my dreams and reality, that I'm a hard drive with limited gigabytes, and one day I won't be able to maintain the firewall between them. I wonder if that's what senility is. Over the years, I've begun to suspect that all the houses of which I've been dreaming are just different wings of the same great house. Today I realize it's true. Why have I been dreaming of the White Mansion all these years? How could I possibly have known it existed? Now that I'm a little over the edge anyway, I can admit something. My whole life, I've secretly been afraid that beneath my fiercely focused grooming and accessorizing, I'm, well, psychotic. Never underestimate a well-dressed bimbo. The real thinkers of the world aren't the best dressed. Staying on top of the latest fashions, accessorizing and presenting oneself is time-consuming. It takes a lot of effort, energy, and concentration to be incessantly happy and perfectly groomed. You meet somebody like that, ask yourself what they're running from. Back in high school, I began to suspect I was bipolar. There were times when, for no good reason at all, I felt downright, well, homicidal was the only word for it. I learned that the busier I stayed, the less time I had to feel it. I sometimes wonder if before I was born, someone showed me the script or filled me in on the highlights. It's deja vu to the worst extreme. I refuse to believe I would have auditioned for this role. As I stare at the White Mansion, and I know what parts of it look like inside, and I know there's no way I could know those things, I wonder if I'm a serious nutcase. I think if none of this is happening, it's because I'm really locked up in a padded cell somewhere, hallucinating. If so, I hope they change my drugs soon. Whatever I'm on isn't working. I don't want to go in there. I want to go in there and never leave. Duality is me. The house has countless entrances through elaborately manicured gardens. Derek and I enter one of the gardens. It's so lovely, it's almost painful to look at. Paths of glistening gold pavers unfurl through exotic perfumed bushes and circle clusters of willowy silver-leafed trees. Dazzling pearl benches offer respite from the sun beneath lacy leaves, and silk chaises dot outdoor rooms of billowing chiffon. Flowers bend and sway in a light, perfect breeze, the precise degree of sultry, not too hot or moist, but warm and wet, like sex is warm and wet. I have dreamed of a garden like this. Small differences, but not many. We pass a fountain that sprays rainbows of shimmery water into the air. Thousands of flowers in every dazzling shade of yellow circle it. Velvety buttercups and waxy tulips. Creamy lilies and blossoms that do not exist in our world. For a moment I think of Alina, because she loves yellow. But that thought reeks of death and brings other thoughts with it. So I turn away from the beauty of the fountain and focus on the hated face and voice of my companion. He begins to give me instructions. He tells me we're looking for a room with an ornate gilt-framed mirror that is approximately 10 feet tall by 5 feet wide. The last time he saw the room, it was empty of all furnishings save the mirror. The corridor off which the room opened was light, airy, and had a floor of unbroken white marble. The walls of the corridor were also white and adorned with brilliant murals between tall windows. "Keep an eye out for white marble floors," he instructs me, "because only two of the wings, as of the last time he was here, have them. The floors in other wings are gold, bronze, silver, iridescent, pink, mint, yellow, lavender, and other pastels. The rare wing is crimson. If I see a black floor, I am to turn back immediately." We enter a circular foyer with a high glass ceiling that collects the sunny day. The walls and floor are translucent silver and reflect the sky above in such vivid detail that, when a cream puff cloud scoots overhead, I feel as if I'm walking through it. What a clever design! A room in the sky. Did the concubine create it? Did the unseelie king design it for her? Could a being capable of creating such horrors as the unseelie also create such delights? Sunlight bathes me from above, bounces back at me from the wall and floors. Mac 1.0 would have hooked up an iPod and stretched out here for hours. Mac 5.0 shivers. Not even this much sun can warm the part of her that has gone cold. I realize I've forgotten my enemy. I tune him back in. Assuming, of course, Derek is saying, that the room we seek still opens off one of those white marbled halls. That gets my attention. Assuming?
The mansion rearranges itself. One of those inconveniences I mentioned.
What is with you fairies anyway? I explode. Why does everything have to change? Why can't things just be what they are? Why can't a house be a normal house and a book a normal book? Why does it all have to be so complicated? I want to get back to Dublin now, find the book, figure out what needs to be done and escape this damned reality. He doesn't answer, but I don't need him to. If a fae were to ask me why an apple eventually rots or humans eventually die, I would shrug and say it was the nature of human things. Change is the nature of fae things. They are always becoming something else. That's a critical thing to remember when dealing with anything fae, as I learned from the Shades. I wonder how much further they've evolved since I last saw them.
Sometimes it rearranges itself on a grand scale.
Darrow continues.
While other times it merely swaps a few things around. Only once did it take me several days to find the room I seek. I usually find it more quickly.
Days? My head swivels and I stare. I could be stuck in here with him for days? The sooner we get started, the better. A dozen halls open off the foyer, some well-lit, others soothingly dim. Nothing is frightening. The house exudes a sense of well-being and peace. Still, it is a grand labyrinth, and I wait for him to choose our path. Although I have long been dreaming of this place, I do not know this foyer. I suspect the house is so large that an entire human life of dreams would not be enough to explore it all.
There are several rooms in the mansion that house Silvers. The one we seek holds a single mirror.
He gives me a sharp look.
Avoid the other mirrors if you stumble upon them. Do not gaze into them. I am not forbidding you knowledge, merely trying to protect you.
Right, and the White Mansion is really black. You make it sound as if we're splitting up. I'm surprised. He worked so hard to get me at his side. Now he's letting me go. Have I been so convincing? Or does he have an ace up his sleeve I don't know about?
We cannot afford to waste time here. The longer I'm here, the more chance there is for someone else to find my book.
My book, I correct. He laughs.
Our book.
I say nothing. My book, and he's dead the moment I've got it and know how to use it. Sooner if he's no longer useful. He leans back against the wall and crosses his arms over his chest. In this room of sky, he is a golden angel, shoulders propped against a cloud.
We can both have everything we want, Michaela. With you and I allied, there are no limits. Nothing and no one can stop us. Do you realize that?
I get to use it first. He won't exist to use it by the time I'm done with it. No, wait. Unmaking him would be too easy a death. I want to murder him.
We have plenty of time to decide who does what with it first. But for now, are we friends or not?
It is on the tip of my tongue to mock him, to tell him words mean nothing. Why does he ask me absurd questions? I can so easily lie. He should judge my actions, but I don't share advice with the enemy. We are friends, I say easily. He gestures for me to take the nearest corridor on my right, one with a dusky rose floor, and turns for the first one on his left, which gleams deep bronze. What do I do if I find it? I ask. It's not like we have cell phones programmed with nifty little acronyms.
I branded you at the base of your skull. Press your fingers to the mark and call for me.
He has already turned away and begun walking down his hall. I hiss at his back. The day will come, and soon, when I remove his brand, if I have to scrape my skull down to bare bone. I'd do it now, except I don't want to run the risk of damaging Barron's. It's all I have left of him. His hands were on me there, gentle, possessive. There is a smile in Darrock's voice when he warns.
If you find the silver and return to Dublin without me, I will hunt you.
Right back at you, Darrock, I say in the same light, warning tone. Don't even think of leaving without me. I may not have a mark on you, but I'll find you. I'll always find you. I mean it. The hunter is now the hunted. I have him in my sights and will keep him there until I decide to pull the trigger. No more running from anything. He stops and glances over his shoulder at me. The tiny gold flecks in his eyes flare brighter, and he inhales sharply. If I know Faye as well as I think I do, I just turned him on. The Danny Daily. 97 days, AWC. Danny Mega O'Malley slays a hunter. Read all about it in TDD, your only source for the latest news in and around Dublin. She see us celebrate. We did it. We took one down. Took us all feckin' night, but Jane and the Guardians finally bagged one of the flappin' fecks. Pumped it full of so much iron it crashed to the street. I stabbed the blimey feck straight through the heart with a sword of light. It was something to see. You should have been there. Thing bled dark up into the sword all the way to the hilt, and for a sec I worried it might have broke it or something. But it's working again fine, so tell Ro not to get her panties in a twist. Call to arms, dudes. Get out of that abbey and fight, fight, fight! Enough reconnoitering already. Rhymes with loitering, dudes. Useless! Do something. We can make a difference. Haul ass to Dublin Castle. It's new headquarters for the new Garda, and they're way cool. Said all she see as welcome, especially single ones. Need to repopulate Dublin, you know. Ain't gonna happen by itself. Lots of heroes on the streets, risking their lives, kicking fey ass. Hook up now. Meet tonight. Dublin Castle. 8 o'clock. Join the hunt. P.S. Max sorry she can't be there. Still busy with other stuff, but she'll be back real soon. I slap the latest edition of my rag to the street lamp and pound in a nail. I tell him what'll work for me and don't tell him what won't. Time she got a lie. I cram a candy bar in my mouth and freeze frame to the next street lamp on my route. I know my rags are getting to the peeps. I've been seeing results. Couple of she-seers ditched the abbey already. I'm taking over where Mac left off. Shit-stirrer extraordinaire. Bucking Rose rules and regs, all the while telling her whatever she wants to hear. 2 candy bars and a protein pack later, I'm done with my route and burning up the pavement from my fave place. I got hours for myself now and gonna spend them all circling Chester's, slicing and dicing everything that comes within a 10-block radius of it. I swagger down the street. Ryo and his men are in there. At least I think they are. Ain't seen none in a while, but keep hoping. See, 'cause they piss me off. They threatened me. Nobody threatens the Mega. I snicker. Pub ain't no good if patrons can't get in. I can't keep them out all night, 'cause I hunt with the Guardians and kill what they trap. But I do enough damage during the day. Jane caught me one afternoon, said they'll kill me for it. He's heard tales of them, steers clear. Says they're no more human than the Fae. Told him the pricks can just try to mess with me. See, another thing I didn't tell nobody is, when I stabbed the hunter, something weird happened. The dart came all the way up my sword and got into my arm a little. Infected me like a splinter. For a couple of days my hand had black veins and was icy like it was dead. Had to wear a glove to hide it. Thought I might lose it. Have to learn to fight right-handed. Looks okay now. Ain't no hurry to kill a hunter again. But I think I'm faster. And Rose's orders don't seem to make me feel near as conflicted as they used to. Think Ryo and his dudes maybe got nothing on me, and I'd like to test it. Like to show Mac. But it's been more than 3 whole weeks since I saw her last. Since we broke into the libraries. Barons ain't round neither. I don't worry. Ain't my nature. I live, leave the worrying for the warts. But I sure wish she'd show up. Any time now'd be real good. She Sadoo's been all over the city past few days. Took out 12 of Jane's men in one night, like it was playing with us. Kept dividing us, picking us off. Kind of starting to wonder if it's looking for me. 5. In the house, away from my enemy, I find solace for a time. Grief, loss, pain melt away. I wonder if they cannot exist inside these walls. The weight of my spear in the holster beneath my arm is back, heavy against my side. Like Valaine, Darok has some way of taking it from me, but when we are apart, he returns it. Perhaps so I can defend myself. I can't imagine needing to in a place such as this. There has never been and will never be another place in any realm, in any dimension that holds me in such thrall as the White Mansion. Not even the bookstore competes for dominance in my soul. The house is mesmerizing. If deep down inside where I feel psychotic, I am angered by this, I am too lulled by whatever drug it feeds me to focus on it for long. I wander the rose-floored corridor, absorbing it in a dreamy daze. Windows line the right side of the hall, and beyond the crystal-edged panes, dawn blushes over gardens filled with pink roses, wreathed heads nodding sleepily in the gentle morning breeze. The rooms that open off this corridor are decorated in hues of morning sky. The colors of the hall, the day beyond, and the rooms complement one another perfectly, as if from every angle this wing was designed as an outfit, flawlessly accessorized, to be donned depending on the mood. When the rose floor ends and a sudden turn in the corridor sets me on a lavender path, violet dusk clings to the windows. Nocturnal creatures frolic in a forest glade beneath a moon rimmed with brilliant cerulean. The rooms in this corridor are furnished in shades of twilight. Yellow and reflective floors open onto sunny days and sunnier rooms. Bronze corridors have no windows, only tall arched doors that lead into enormous high-ceilinged kingly rooms, some for dining, some filled with books and comfortable chairs, others for dancing, and still more for what I think are forms of entertainment I don't understand. I imagine I hear echoes of laughter. Lit by candles, the rooms off bronze corridors are masculine and smell of spice. I find the scent intoxicating, disturbing. I walk and walk, looking into this room and that, delighted by the things I find, the things I recognize. In this place, every hour of day and night is always available. I have been here many times before. There's the piano I played. Here's the sunroom where I sat and read. There's the kitchen where I ate truffles smothered in cream and filled with delicate fruits that don't exist in our world. Here, a flute lies on a table, beside an open book, next to a teapot decorated with a pattern as familiar to me as the back of my own hand. There's the rooftop garden, high atop a turret where I've gazed through a telescope at an azure sea. Here, a library of endless rows of books where I've passed time uncounted. Each room is a study in beauty, each item in it adorned with intricate detail, as if its creator had infinity in which to work. I wonder how long the concubine was here. I wonder how much of this house is her creation. I taste forever in this place, but unlike in the Hall of All Days, forever here is exquisite, gentle. The house promises a blissful eternity. It does not terrify or cow. The house is time as it was meant to be, endless, serene. Here, a room of thousands of gowns. I dash through row after row, my arms spread wide, my hands fanning the fabulous fabrics. I love these gowns. I pluck one from its hanger and spin around, dancing with it. Faint strains of music drift upon the air and I lose track of time. Here's a curio cabinet housing items I cannot name but nonetheless recognize. I pocket a few of the smaller trinkets. I open a music box and listen to a song that makes me feel I am drifting in space, enormous and free, more right in my skin than I've ever been. Poised on the brink of all possibles. I forget everything for a time, lost in joy that is larger than the mansion itself. In room after room, I find something familiar, something that makes me happy. I see the first of many beds, as in my dreams there are so many that I lose count after a time. I wander sumptuous room after room, see bed after bed. Some of the rooms have nothing but beds. I begin to feel uneasy. I don't like looking at these beds. The beds disturb me. I turn my head away because they make me feel things I don't want to feel. Need. Desire. Alone. Empty beds. Don't want to be alone anymore. So tired of being alone. Tired of waiting. After a time, I stop looking in the rooms. I was wrong when I thought it might not be possible to feel negative things inside the White Mansion. Grief wells up inside me. I've lived so long, lost so many things. I force myself to focus. I remind myself that I'm supposed to be looking for something. A mirror. I love that mirror. I shake my head. No, I don't. I just need it. I don't have any emotions about it. It brings me such pleasure. It brings us together. White marble, Derek said. I need to find white marble floors. Not crimson, not bronze, not pink, and especially not black. I envisioned the mirror as he described it. 10 feet tall, 5 feet wide. Gilt-framed like the ones at 1247 LaRue. The mirror is a part of the vast unseelie hallow that is the network of silvers. I can sense hallows. I can sense all fey oops, objects of power. It is perhaps my greatest advantage. I reach out with my she-seer senses, expand and search. I sense nothing. It didn't work in the Hall of All Days either. Impossible, I suppose, to sense a silver while inside the silvers. My feet turn me, and I begin walking in a new direction with complete confidence. I'm suddenly certain I have seen the mirror I need many times, and I know exactly where it is. I'll find the way out long before Derek does. And although I will not leave without him, I have much use for him. It will please me to best him. I hurry down a mint corridor, turn without hesitation onto an iridescent path, and rush down a pale blue hall. A corridor of silver turns to blush wine. The mirror is ahead. It draws me. I can't wait to get to it. I'm focused, so focused that the crimson hallway barely makes a dent in my awareness. I'm focused, so focused on my goal that by the time I realize what I've done, it's too late. I don't know what makes me look down, but something does. I freeze. I'm at a crossroads, the intersection of two halls. I can go east, west, north, or south, if such directions exist in the house, but whichever way I choose, the floor is the same color. Black. I stand uncertainly, berating myself for screwing up again, when suddenly a hand slips into mine. It is warm, familiar, and much too real. I close my eyes. I've been played with in fairy before. Who am I to be tortured with now? What is my punishment to be? Which ghost will nip at me now with needles for teeth? Alina? Barons? Both? I fist my other hand so nothing can hold it. I know better than to think if I keep my eyes closed, my ghost will go away. It doesn't work that way. When your private demons decide to mess with you, they demand their pound of flesh. It's best to pay it and get it over with. Then I can focus on finding my way off the black floor. I brace myself for how bad it's going to be. I speculate that if golden floors in the Hall of All Days were bad, black floors in the White Mansion will be, forgive the pun, beyond the pale. Fingers twine with mine. I know the hand as well as my own. Sighing, I open my eyes. I jerk away and scramble back frantically, boots slipping on the shiny black surface. I sprawl flat on my back with such a jolt that I bite my tongue. I begin to hyperventilate. Does she see me? Does she know me? Is she there? Am I? She laughs, a silvery sound, and it makes my heart hurt. I remember laughing like that once. Happy. So happy. I don't even try to get up. I just lay there and watch her. I'm bewildered. I'm hypnotized. I'm carved in two by a sense of duality I cannot reconcile. Not Alina. Not Barons. At the juncture of east, west, north, and south, she stands. Her. The sad, beautiful woman who haunts my dreams. She is so dazzling it makes me want to weep. But she's not sad. She's so happy that I could hate her. She glows radiantly. She smiles and it curves lips of such soft, divine perfection that mine part instinctively to receive her kiss. Is this her, the unseelie king's concubine? No wonder he was obsessed. When she begins to glide away down one of the corridors, the blackest of the four, the one that absorbs the light cast by candles in sconces, I push myself up. Moth to a flame I follow. According to Valaine, the concubine was mortal. In fact, her mortality was the first domino in a long, convoluted line that toppled out of control and led to this moment. Nearly a million years ago, the Seelie King asked the original Seelie Queen. Since her death, many queens have risen, only to be ousted by another who achieved greater power and support. To turn his concubine Fae, to make her immortal so he could keep her forever. When the queen refused, the king built his concubine the White Mansion inside the Silvers. He secreted his beloved away from the vindictive queen, where she could live without aging until he was able to perfect the Song of Making and turn her Fae himself. If only the queen had granted his one simple request. But the leader of the true race was controlling, jealous and small. Unfortunately, the king's efforts to duplicate the Song of Making, the mystical stuff of creation, a power and right that the queen of their matriarchal race selfishly hoarded, created the Unseelie, imperfect half-lives that he couldn't bear to kill. They lived. They were his sons and daughters. He created a new realm, the Court of Shadows, where his children could play while he continued his work, his labor of love. But the day came when he was betrayed by one of his own children and found out by the Seelie Queen. They clashed in a battle to end all battles. Seelie struck down their darker brethren, who sought only the right to exist. The dominoes fell one after another. The death of the Seelie Queen at the hands of the king, the suicide of the concubine, the act of atonement in which the Seelie King created the deadly Shisadu. He rechristened himself the Unseelie King. Never again would he be associated with the petty viciousness of the Seelie. Henceforth, he would be Unseelie, literally meaning not of the Seelie. He no longer called his home the Court of Shadows in which he hid to perform his labor of love. It became simply Unseelie Court. By then, however, the court was a prison for his children, a macabre place of shadows and ice. The cruel Seelie Queen's last act had been to use the Song of Making, not for creation, not to make his beloved immortal, but to destroy, trap, and torture for all eternity any who had dared disobey her. And the dominoes fell. The book containing the Unseelie King's knowledge, all his darkness and evil, somehow ended up in my world, being protected by humans. It was set loose in a manner that I have yet to determine, but of this I am certain. Alina's murder, my screwed-up life and Baron's death, all are the results of a chain of Fae events that began a million years ago over a single mortal. My world. We humans. We're just pawns on an immortal chessboard. We got in the way. Jack Lane, attorney extraordinaire, would put the Unseelie King, not Darok, on trial, and make a persuasive case against the concubine for guilt by association. Because the unthinkable occurred, and the original queen died before she had the chance to pass on the Song of Making to one of the princesses as her successor, the Fae race began to decline. Many princesses rose to the Seelie throne, but few lasted long before another wrested away her power. Queens were killed, others merely deposed and banished. Infighting grew and coups became more frequent. The Fae race became limited. All that was already was all that could ever be. No new things could be made. Old powers were lost, and over the eons ancient magic was forgotten, until one day the current queen was no longer capable of reinforcing the weakening walls between realms and retaining control of the deadly Unseelie. Darok exploited this weakness and brought the walls between our worlds crashing down. Now Fae and human vie for control of a planet that is too small, too fragile for both races. All because of a single mortal, the domino that started all the others falling. I follow the woman who I suspect is that mortal, in a not quite really there kind of way, down the inky corridor. If she is the concubine, I can summon no anger toward her, try though I might. On their immortal chessboard, she was a pawn, too. She is lit from within. Her skin shimmers with a translucent glow that illuminates the walls of the tunnel. The hall grows darker, blacker, stranger with each step we take. In contrast, she is holy, divine, an angel gliding into hell. She is warmth, shelter, and forgiveness. She is mother, lover, daughter, truth. She is all. Her pace quickens, and she races down the tunnel, passing soundlessly over obsidian floors, laughing with joy. I know that sound. I love that sound. It means her lover is near. He is coming. She feels his approach. He is so powerful. It is what first drew her to him. She'd never encountered anyone like him. She was awed that he chose her. She is awed every day that he continues choosing her. The stuff of him explodes through from the Court of Shadows, telling her he comes, filling her home, prison, where she lives a fabulous life, a sentence not of her choosing, surrounded by everything she wants, illusions. She misses her world, so far away and all of them long dead, and waits for him with hope, ever-growing despair. He will carry her to his bed and do things to her until his black wings open wide, so wide, eclipsing the world, and when he is inside her, nothing else will matter but the moment, their dark, intense lust, the endless passion they share. No matter what else he is hers. What is between them is without blame. Love knows no right or wrong. Love is, only is. Rushes down the dark, warm, inviting hall, hurrying to his, my, bed. We need our lover. It has been too long. In her chamber I behold the duality of which I am carved. Half the concubine's boudoir is dazzlingly white, brilliantly illuminated. The other half is a dense, seductive, welcoming blackness. It is split evenly down the middle. Light and the absence of light. I savor both. Neither disturbs me. I suffer no conflict over things upon which a simpler mind would be forced to bestow labels such as good and evil, or embrace madness. Against one frosted crystalline wall of the white half of the room is a huge round bed on a pedestal, draped in silks and snowy ermine throws. Alabaster petals are scattered everywhere, perfuming the air. The floor is carpeted with plush white furs. White logs from which silvery white flames pop and crackle blaze in an enormous alabaster hearth. Tiny diamonds float lazily on the air, sparkling. The woman hurries for the bed. Her clothing melts away and she is naked. But no, this is not his pleasure, not this time. His needs are different, deeper, more demanding tonight. She spins and we gaze, lips parted at the black half of the room. Draped in black velvet and furs, covered with soft ebony petals that smell of him, that crush so softly beneath our skin, it is all bed, from wall to wall. He needs it all. Wings unfolding, no mortal can see past them. He is coming. He is near. I am naked, wild, ready. I need. This is why I live. She and I stand staring at the bed. Then he is there, and he gathers her up, but I can't see him. I feel enormous wings closing around us. I know he's there. She's enveloped in energy, in darkness, wet and warm like sex is wet and warm, and I'm breathing lust. I am lust, and I strain to see him, strain to feel him when suddenly... I am a simple beast, on crimson sheets with barons inside me. I cry out because even here in this boudoir of duality and illusion, I know it is not real. I know I have lost him. He is gone, forever gone. I'm not back there in that basement with him, still pariah, but beginning to surface enough to know that he just asked me what I wore to my prom, and shutting it all down, racing from reality back into my madness, so I don't have to face what happened to me, or deal with what I'm beginning to suspect I might have to do. I'm not standing there a few days later, looking back at his bed with those fur-lined handcuffs, contemplating climbing back in and pretending I hadn't recovered so I could keep doing it. Every raw, animal thing we'd done in my sexually insatiable state, fully aware of what I was doing and who I was doing it with. Dead. Dead. I've lost so much. If only I'd known then what I know now. The king lifts the concubine. I see her sliding down a body I cannot discern in the darkness. And I straddle Barons and slam him home inside me. God, it feels so good. The concubine strains, arches her neck, and makes a sound that doesn't come from our world. I laugh as I come. I'm alive, so alive. And when his vast wings spread wide, when they fill the blackness of his boudoir and pass beyond, he knows more joy in this moment than he has ever known in his entire existence. And the bitch queen would deny him this. And I know more joy in this moment than I've ever known, because there is no right, no wrong, only now. Oh, but wait, Barons is vanishing, moving away from me, melting into the darkness. I will not lose him again. I lunge to my feet, get tangled in sheets for a moment. Then I am hurrying to catch him. It grows colder. My breath ices the air. Ahead I see only black, blue, and a white that is bled of all light. I run toward the black as fast as my feet will carry me. But hands are on my shoulders, turning me, forcing me away, fighting me. They are too strong. They drag me down a black corridor, and I beat at the body that dares interrupt us. No others are allowed here. This is our place. The intruder will die, if only for gazing upon us. Cruel hands push me, slam me into a wall. My ears ring from the impact. I am dragged, shoved again and again. I bounce off wall after wall until finally it stops. I shudder and begin to weep. Arms band me, hold me tightly. I press my face to the warmth of a hard, muscled chest. I am too small a vessel to survive on a sea of such emotion. I grip his collar and cling. I try to breathe. I am raw, aching with need, and I am empty, so empty. I lost it all. And for what? I can't stop trembling.
What part of, if you see a black floor, turn back immediately, didn't you understand?
Dara growls.
For fuck's sake, you went straight to the blackest of them all. What's with you?
I lift my head from his chest, but barely. For a moment, all I can do is stare down. The floor is pale pink. He has dragged me all the way back to one of the dawn-themed wings. I fumble for my spear. It is gone again. Awareness returns in slow degrees. I shove him away.
I warned you,
he says coolly, offended by my anger. Well, bully for him. I'm offended by him, too. You didn't tell me enough, just to stay away. You should have told me more.
I do not explain fey matters to humans. But since you clearly will not obey otherwise, black floors are his wings. Never enter them. You are not strong enough to survive there. The residue of all that once transpired there still walks those wings. It can trap you. You forced me to come in after you, putting us both at risk.
We glare at each other, breathing hard. Although he is pumped on unseelie flesh and far stronger because of it than I am, I gave him a hell of a fight. It hadn't been easy getting me out of there.
What were you doing, Michaela?
He says, finally, softly. How did you find me there? I counter.
My brand. You were in extreme distress.
The tiny gold flecks in his eyes glitter.
You were also extremely aroused.
You can sense my feelings from your brand? I am incensed. He subjects me to violation after violation.
Only intense ones. The princes pinpointed your precise location. Be glad they did. I found you just in time. You were rushing for the black half of the boudoir.
So?
The line that divides the two halves of that chamber is no line. It is a silver. The largest ever made by the king. It is also the first and most ancient of them, unlike any of the others. When needed, it was used for punishment, to execute. You were running for the silver that leads straight into the Unseelie King's bedchamber, in the fortress of black ice deep in the Unseelie prison. In a few more of your human seconds, you would have been dead.
Dead? I choke out. Why?
Only two in all existence could ever travel through that silver. The Unseelie King and his concubine. Any other that touches it is instantly killed. Even Fay.
6. The Danny Daily. 102 days AWC. I glared down at the sheet of paper, but set for the title of my rag and the date, nothing's coming. Nothing's been coming for a feckin' hour. Here I sit in the Abbey's dining hall in the middle of this brainless feckin' herd of she-sheep that are so easily led they should wear feckin' halters and waggle fluffy sheep asses, and the words just ain't coming. And they got to. I gotta take up the slack till Matt gets back. Stupid sheep are back to obey and row, and she's yanked them back in line again. Got 'em all busy trying to clear the feckin' shades from the Abbey. Newsflash, dudes. I keep telling you they're reproducing. They eat, they grow, they split, like feckin' amoebas. I've been tracking 'em. I've been watching 'em so hard I can tell 'em apart now. Times I play with 'em, mess with the lights, see how close they can really get to me. That's how I know so much about 'em, but nobody listens to me. Only time I'm heard is when they read my paper. They don't talk about it, but everybody's using the shade busters now. Anybody say thanks? Nope, not a single good job, Mega. Not even the teeniest little acknowledgement that I invented 'em. I need Mac. Been nearly a month and I'm starting to worry that she's... Nah, ain't going there. But where the feck is she? Ain't seen her since we broke into the forbidden libraries together. She in Fairy again? She don't know it, but I read her journal when she was locked up in that cell, prior. And nobody was paying attention to her stuff except Ro. She read it too, but I took it back. Had to know what Ro knew. It's one of my hang-ups. I gotta know everything Ro knows and figure out where she's going before she goes there. If I can do that... Dude, I can run this place. I know time spent in Fairy don't move the same way as time in the real world, so I ain't as worried about Mac as I might be. See, Valaine's gone too, so I figure she's with him. Weird thing is, I keep stopping by BB&B and it looks like Barron's has gone too. Tried to get into Chester's last night to ask about him, but the stupid feckin' feckers bounced me at the door. Me, the Mega! I grin and swagger a little in my seat. It took six of 'em. Six of Barron's freaky fecks had to work their arses off to keep me out, and we went at it for over an hour. I wouldn't have given up at all, but that kind of freeze-framing starves me, and I didn't have enough candy bars crammed in my pockets. Got hungry, had to eat, said screw it and left. One of 'em followed me to Dublin's Edge, like he thought he was throwing me out of the city. As if! I'll try again soon. Still, I'm getting a little worried. Where the fuck did everybody go? Why ain't nobody talking about the LM anymore? Where's the Shisadu? It's been quiet, way too quiet, and that creeps the feck out of me. Only other time things got this quiet. Yeah, well, dude, the past ain't me. What's already happened is for has-beens. I'm all about the future. Tomorrow's my day. Today sure as feck ain't. I ain't never had it before, but spect I got writer's block. Spect it's 'cause I've been sitting here watching a couple hundred she-sheep do the equivalent of knit. Got an assembly line set up in the dining hall making iron bullets. But get this, not for us. For Jane and his guardians. Don't know how Ro managed to make 'em all scared of their shadows again, but she did. Little things she says make 'em doubt themselves. Only took her 2 weeks after Mac disappeared to convince 'em all Mac was dead and to give up on her. Sheep, I tell ya. Takes everything I got not to stand up, waggle my ass, and yell, baa! But I guess the sheep shit's too deep in here for me to move, 'cause I sit and chew on my pen and wait for inspiration. While I'm biding time, I watch Jo. Used to be friends with her. Thought she had a mind of her own. She's smart, real smart. Puts things together the other sheep don't. But she got weird a few months back. Started hanging all the time with Barb and Liz and never had time for me anymore. Used to be she was the only one didn't treat me like a baby. Used to be they all treated me like a kid. Now they hardly treat me at all. Nobody sits at my table. Good feckin' thing, too. Ain't no room for sheep at my table. Joe's sitting real quiet, watching Liz, watching her hard. I wonder if she turned lesbo or something, and that explains why she changed. Came out of her closet and moved on. Maybe got herself a menage a trois with Liz and Barb. I snicker at my joke. Dude, if you can't crack yourself up, ain't never gonna crack anybody else up. At first, The gunshots are so faint that even my super hearing don't register what they are. Then, when I do, I sort of figure Baron's dudes must have come back for some reason. And like last time, they're firing warning shots. Even though we got a shitload of Uzis and other guns, we got no use for them here. Only in Dublin. They don't work on shades. We don't bring our guns into the Abbey. We leave them on the bus. Dawning on me quick now how stupid that is. Later, I find out it started at the west end of the Abbey. Started where Max slept when she stayed here. Where I've been sleeping lately, in the Dragon Lady's library. When the screaming begins, I freeze frame into motion, but with caution. Automatic gunfire is something I gotta factor into my super speed equation. I'm fast, but, dude, the rat-a-tat-tat of that kind of spray is feckin' fast, too. Tough to dodge. And what I'm hearing is constant. I'm in one of the corridors, heading for the screams, but suddenly everything is as dark as it must be where Rowan's head is, straight up her ass. I snicker again. I'm cracking myself up tonight. I stop, plaster against the wall and start moving like a Joe, watching, straining to see down the dark corridor. I ain't got my halo, but I got a couple of flashlights in my pockets. I pull one out, click it on. We ain't never got all the shades out of the Abbey. Nobody puts on their boots without shining flashlights in them and shaking them out real good first. And then only in broad daylight. Nobody